Before I begin the sermon I prepared, I just want to say that there's a very similar text in the Quran about paying your wages before nightfall. So a similar idea of that you can't let a worker work and not pay them the day they work. So in Deuteronomy it says before nightfall, and in the Quran it says before the sweat of their brow dries. But it always reminds me when I hear that we have similar traditions and wisdom about treating workers with justice. So, according to a Jewish folktale, there was once a king who ruled a kingdom with justice and wisdom. The goodness and fairness of the king offended those who wished to do evil. Included in this number was a wizard. The wizard hated the king and hated the integrity with which the king ruled. The wizard devised a plan to destroy the king, the kingdom, and all who were dear to the king. So he cursed the harvest. Anyone who ate of the harvest for 7 years would be driven insane. In the court of the king, there was a prophet. The prophet learned of the wizard's curse not in time to stop him, but in time to offer the king a warning. As the harvest was being brought in, the prophet brought the news to the king. Anyone who eats of the harvest for the next 7 years will turn mad. The king was distressed. What could be done? How could he save his people? He ordered that all the uncontaminated foodstuffs of the kingdom be gathered and measured. He gathered his circle of advisors to ask their advice. What can we do to protect the kingdom from the curse? It was determined that there was just enough food to sustain one person for the 7 years of the curse. Only one person could eat uncontaminated food and remain sane and sober while the rest of the kingdom sank into madness. But who? Whom would the king trust with the impossible mission? What could one sane person do in the kingdom of the mad? The kingdom turned to his trusted friend, the prophet. You should be the one, he charged. You shall be given the uncontaminated food, enough for 7 years of the curse. You shall eat. And while all the rest of us sink into madness, you shall be the one who remains sane, sober, and rational. But your majesty, what can one man do? What can one sane man do in the kingdom of the mad? The king replied, you cannot keep us from our madness, but you must remind us that we are mad. Ride through the kingdom and proclaim aloud, my brothers and sisters, remember the curse, remember you are mad. It was a daunting and lonely responsibility. But the prophet so loved the king, he accepted the task. And so it came to be that all the kingdom ate of the cursed harvest, and all of them became insane. In their speech and dress and behavior, they were quite mad. It was the daily task of the loyal prophet to ride through the kingdom as he had been charged, proclaiming, my brothers and sisters, remember the curse, remember that you are mad. One day during the years of the curse, as he rode about the kingdom proclaiming his truth, one of the citizens of the kingdom looked up at him with curiosity. If it is true, my brother, that we are mad because of a curse, and you are the only one sane one among us, why do you proclaim it? What good will it do? He said, if we are mad, how will your proclamation change anything? Isn't this your own madness? A thoughtful question from a madman, thought the prophet. Indeed, what good does it do? Was this task just his own madness? Had the curse affected him as well? So he declared, I proclaim this truth out of loyalty to my king who charged me to do so. I proclaim this so that you might stop for a moment before you act and perhaps wonder if your act derives not from any reason, but from the curse's madness. You may be mad, but perhaps this once you will not choose to behave in the way of the insane. Perhaps this once you will choose the alternative and behave in a manner that is reasoned, just, and wise. And then the prophet sighed, thinking of all the mad behavior he had witnessed these many years. He thought of all the senseless brutality, the mindless cruelty, the self-destructive acts he had witnessed. He realized that his aspiration was probably a vain hope. Perhaps the madman was right. Perhaps he was as mad as the rest. Then he thought again and declared, "No, if nothing else succeeds, this I know. By fulfilling my charge, by never ceasing to proclaim your insanity, by warning you and begging you to behave in a manner more reasoned and more humane, this I am certain I shall achieve. I shall remain sane. More than the food I eat, this is the way to remain sane and sensible." "Very well, my brother," replied the thoughtful madman. "Fulfill your charge and offer your proclamation. And perhaps one day soon, we will awaken from the curse and join you on your mission." A couple of years ago, I experienced such a prophet when I was in the bank. An African-American man walked in and walked up to the coin machine where you put the coins and the bills come out. And he was putting coins in. He started yelling about racism and about how the government was taking away his constitutional rights and about how inequality had to stop. Everyone in the bank looked down and continued with their business. One of the managers came out and asked him if there was a problem. "Jesus warned about the world descending into evil. The evil of the greed is here." And he continued to preach as he did his bank business. The manager stood and listened, and when the man finished with his banking business, he thanked the manager for listening, and he left. At first, as I witnessed the scene, I wondered if he was unstable, dangerous, on drugs. But then I wondered if he was the sane one and all the rest of us were crazy. Perhaps he was doing what we should all be doing. Instead of walking into the bank and conducting business as usual, perhaps we should be raising our voices about the growing income inequality in our country. Perhaps we should be raising our voices about the fact that income inequality is more severe in the U.S. than it is in nearly all of West Africa, North Africa, Europe, and Asia. I regret not having talked to this daring man in the bank who spoke the truth so boldly. Many of us here may desire to proclaim the truth as we watch injustice and madness in the world around us. However, I suspect most of us are not willing to challenge the injustice around us in as direct and confrontational a manner as the man in the bank. With so much distressing news bombarding us every day, we may, like the prophet in the mad world, feel alone and wonder if we are the mad ones. Or perhaps we feel we are not mad because everyone we talk to agrees with us. And then we are shocked when we encounter a relative or someone outside of Madison who has very different views and ideas about the world. There is a divisiveness that has built up in our country and is blasting from the campaign trail this year. A madness that seems to also be blasting from the campaign trail. This divisiveness alienates us from those who are different from us, and often even from those in our neighborhood and in our families. There is the economic divide as the wealth gap continues to grow. There is the racial divide that has its roots in our nation's original sin of slavery and is perpetrated to this day with a racially biased justice system. There is the divide in our state between those who live in the cities and our rural brothers and sisters. There is a divide between immigrants and native-born U.S. citizens that is being exploited by presidential candidate Donald Trump as he calls for building a wall to divide us from our southern neighbors. There is an increasing division between religious groups being fueled by Islamophobic rhetoric. I work on income inequality and worker justice and believe that the wealth divide is perhaps the greatest moral crisis of our day. So since I can't unpack all those divisions plaguing us, I want to stick with the wealth gap. As of 2014, the wealthiest 160,000 families in the USA owned as much wealth as the poorest 145 million families. So I'll say that again. The 160,000 families in the US owned as much wealth as the poorest 145 million. Put another way, 20% of the people own 85% of the wealth in this country, with the top 1% owning 34% of it. This disparity between the wealthy few and the struggling majority has not always been so great. The income of the people in the top 20% of the economy on an average made $16,000 in 2014 and has decreased in value by 8%. Since the 1970s, whereas the top 20% made an average of $200,017 in 2014 and has increased by 61% since the 1970s. And the top 1% of the economy has increased 168% since 1980. So the bottom 20% has gone down 8%, while the top 1% has gone down up 168% since 1980. There is not a problem of scarcity in our country, but a problem of distribution. We live in a plentiful land of abundant wealth, but that wealth is being held by a small number of people. Let us not think that we are mad when we question the scarcity narrative that tells us that there's not enough, or a narrative that says that if the fast food workers receive higher wages, then the customers, who are also often low wage themselves, will have to pay more for food, instead of a narrative that says that corporate owners could make less money. We must question the madness of this narrative, since in 2013, the CEOs made 774 times more than minimum wage workers. But in 1983, they only made 46 times as much as minimum wage workers. That is the madness. One of the central causes of the wealth gap is the individualist nature that consumes our national consciousness and way of life. It has clouded our national vision from knowing the Unitarian principle that we are and we must respect the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. When the interests of a few over the interest of the good of a whole community, when we prioritize the interest of a few over the interest of the good of the whole community, CEOs make exponentially more than their workers, and we have a taxation system that is based on the interest of the wealthiest in our nation. These disparities are not new, but they are greater than they have been since the Great Depression. The words of the great Unitarian minister, John Haynes Holmes, wrote in 1912 words that ring eerily true today. He said in 1912, "Poverty in this age, as in every age, in our country as in every country, is primarily due to the fact of social injustice. The taxes are inequitable, throwing the chief burden on the poor instead of upon the rich. The natural resources, which are the basis of all wealth, are in the hands of a few instead of under the control of society at large, and thus exploited for the benefit of the few and not for the sake of common welfare. That the distribution of wealth is grossly unfair and disproportionate, in the final analysis, that society is organized upon the basis of injustice and not of justice. It is permeated by the spirit of selfishness and not by the spirit of love." Unfair taxation is one cause of the wealth gap, but so too is the weakening of the U.S. labor movement. A very recent report by the Economic Policy Institute says that union membership rates in the U.S. today, if they were as high as they were in 1979, non-union working people and union working people would get $133 billion more per year. The Economic Policy Institute has found that the decline of labor unions as a percent of the U.S. workforce has hurt both union and non-union wages. Deunionization has contributed about a third of the total growth of wage inequality among men. And if you look at women, it's about 20%. So this is one of the largest factors that is measurable and identifiable in the growth of inequality. So the decline of unions is both a cause and a symptom of our problem as a society. Their decline has certainly increased the wealth gap and are a symptom of the division and individualism that, instead of interdependence and unity, is pervasive in our country. Unions and congregations like this one, in my opinion, are the last great bastions of communal life and power in our country. Unions have received a terrible reputation in our country and sometimes there's truth in that, but their basic mission is to create a unified voice to gain power in the workplace. Workers, as well as disadvantaged communities, lose when people are divided rather than unified. So together, we must fight this division by finding collective voice so that we are not alone in naming the madness of wealth inequality and the injustice perpetrated against workers. We must work together so that we do not speak the truth only to keep ourselves sane, but so that we can awaken others to join the mission and create real change. As the poet Marge Piercy says, alone you can fight and you can refuse. You can take revenge, what revenge you can, but they will roll over you. But we can do this. If we look back at the history when our country was plagued with similar issues, we see that there were strong communal responses. The Gilded Age of the late 19th century was a time of rapid wealth accumulation among the elite. Think Rockefellers, the time of the Rockefellers. But it was also a time when unions grew steadily in size, power, and influence. The period of the intense inequality that left most Americans behind, also the time that the Haymarket riot happened and Labor Day, May Day emerged, it was a time of growing inequality that left most Americans behind, but also birthed the social gospel movement, which rejected the individual social ethic and put a social reform on the agenda for most mainline Protestant churches. The journey towards justice is long. It takes time to bring people along on our mission, but we must continue to proclaim the madness and listen to those who come from disparate perspectives. Because as Marge Piercy says, the long road starts when you care to act. It starts when you do it again, even after they say no. And that's what we do at the Interfaith Coalition for Worker Justice. Even after there's been a lot of no from the legislature about unions and workers' rights, we keep daring to act because eventually things will change. And as we gather this Labor Day weekend, let us renew our commitment to working for social justice, to speaking out against the massive wealth disparity, and to walking the long road hand in hand with each other and with our neighbors.